grapes are special, you know. They have all the characteristics of a human cell. They have energy systems. They have special systems to remove all the bad stuff from them. Grapes have actually been used as a product to measure human aging programs, and they're a little expensive to do that, so that's they don't do that routinely. But it just says that these things are a living product. Even when it's developed as wine, it's a living product, and still alive in the glass, and is there to be enjoyed and to be appreciated. Fuse
Box. Alrighty, this is Fuse Box number 213. Heard it through the grapevine. And you just might want to take the whole day off.
And may we point you in the direction of a lovely winery to spend your day? Greetings, friends, and welcome in to this, the 213th edition of Fusebox, intoxicatingly entitled Heard It Through the Grapevine. And so much more about that in a bit. I'm your Exploring the Feasibility of Plaid Wine Varietals host, Mark Rose. And over there, polishing the matching Swiss stemware set to a radiant brilliance, the Prime Minister of the Preamp, Milt Keynes, everybody.
Well, thank you kindly. We clearly have a theme going on here, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, how very perceptive of you, Mr. Keynes.
Well, I am awake most of the time. Hey, and this is it, bro. Last show of the year.
Yes, yes, indeed. This is the last show of the year, and one that features, may I add, a delightful interview segment with the owner of one of Oregon's premier wineries, Donald Olson, of Torrey Moore Vineyards, who also, for those of you who are paying attention, was the subject of our pre-roll on the top of the show there.
Yeah, I gotta say, that interview gave me a powerful thirst.
Well, I sincerely hope so, Mr. Keynes, as they do some extraordinary wines over there in a most unique and, dare I say, magical setting. But we'll get into that in a bit.
You know, I know we do this every year, but we're going to be starting our ninth year of this thing.
We are. And you know what? This time, we are really starting the ninth year. And not just saying that we're starting our ninth year every year.
Yeah, that was getting old.
Well, it's kind of like this show, right? Soon, the little show will have to enter middle school and scare all the other shows into giving it their milk money.
Yeah, show's a bully, bro.
Yeah, headed for no good, Mr. Keynes. Probably end up hooked on Twizzlers and selling fake NFTs on some obscure social media platform.
Wait, I thought they were all fake.
Well, speaking of stealing artwork from international retailers and claiming it all as your own, we have so many gall darned wondrous things planned for the next year that it is a virtual, phantasmagorical panoply of potentialities that will thrill, amaze, and make you downright stupid with delight.
Wow. We are talking about our show.
Most assuredly so, sir. You know, seriously, we've been trying like crazy to schedule a few folks since last year. But for one reason or another, timings have been a little challenging. And so it looks like we're finally getting zeroed in. And we'll gab more about them and those and all that when we have but all together.
And there's going to be another remote, too, right?
Yes, Mr. Keynes, there will be. A triumphant return to Suicide Sally's because, well, they forgave us for that unfortunate but small bathroom fire that we caused the last time we were in there. But we're headed back there for a look back at the preceding year for a fuse box and all that transpired and will transpire and all that stuff going forward. So,
And folks, this live end of the year thing, it's not a clip show. So don't worry. We'd never do that to you twice in one year.
For sure. You know, we may be in a quest for audio domination throughout the world, but we're not insane.
Well, at least I'm not.
I'm not so sure about Eco and Milo either.
Bathroom fire! Yay!
Be that as it mustn't, we'll have the whole gang over there, Jeff Pollard and Regina Carroll, and just have a real honest-to-goodness radio debriefing, as it were.
Well, that last one we did was a hoot, so I hope you can have lightning strike a second time for you.
Well, as long as it doesn't set the bathroom on fire, I'm good with it. So, friends, may I suggest something here? If you haven't checked out our Instagram shenanigans, may I humbly invite you to do so? It's rather a fun and kind of quirky place over there, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm totally clueless with the Insta-face tweet. Hell, I was even in that meeting with you and Regina, and she was going over that thing, and my head exploded about 90 seconds in. I think she lost me with click here.
Well, I'm a bit overwhelmed myself, but I do see the creative potential of the thing, and friends, just saying, if the Book of Face has you screaming and yelling and maybe throwing your cat into the straw foliage arrangement, do not come here. This place is for power users. Now, I know these folks don't think of it that way, but trust me, it is the Autobahn of social media platforms. Not for the faint of heart. No, really. Lots of ways to communicate and pretty cleverly, I must say, in some cases. So, yeah, I'm in there, the show is in there, and without the beneficent guidance of our social media maven, Regina Carroll, I surely would not be. But I gotta say, it's kind of fun.
What? Say it isn't so.
No, I know. You know, because more and more as of late, I've become increasingly aligned with your views on this antisocial media thing. But seriously, this one, it's kind of like that odd cookie. Yes, it's blue with chartreuse spots and has feathers, but it just smells so darn good, you just have to try it.
Well, as long as it doesn't quack when you bite into it, I guess you're okay.
Yeah. Well, in any event, check us out over there if you haven't. It's a grand time to be had. And, you know, at this moment right here in time and space, we shall take a short break and get out the nice glasses. Because when we return, a visit to a magical winery.
Oh, now I understand.
The show for everybody, but not everybody will like it. TheFuseBoxShow.com.
We are back, bro.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, I hope you're all thirsty for experience, friends, because we have a delicious feature here to pour into your ear holes. I want to preface this interview with a little backstory, though, if I may.
You may.
Thank you. I was first introduced to Torrymore Vineyards through a friend of the show and a subject of an interview himself a few years back, filmmaker and writer Kelly Baker. We made the trek to the wilds of Dundee, Oregon, about a 45-minute drive from where I sit this very moment, to visit a winery he had been raving about for some time. And, you know, well, I said to myself,
I like wine.
Dundee is a very bucolic place, and it would make for a great break from this rather tedious audio edit I was endeavoring to complete at that time. So, we get out there, and as we approach the vineyard, nestled in some trees off the road and down the hill, something becomes very noticeable. A sort of tranquility, a kind of all things in balance quality that was most curious and quite delightful. Frankly, not something I have encountered in any winery I have visited before. Maybe a monastery, perhaps.
Well, I hear monks make some killer brew, bro.
Have for centuries, yeah. Well, we park, and immediately I notice to the right, a Japanese garden has been worked into the cemetery of the property there, and we mosey up the wooden stairs to the main tasting room, and it's becoming more apparent that there is clearly a Japanese or Asian sensibility about all the designing and the cleanliness of lines in this architecture. So the second you step into the main entrance, it hits you. Seriously, it's a palpable sensation of harmony and centeredness that really, really must be experienced to truly appreciate. We're greeted by Sapna with a very welcoming smile, and you really get the feeling you've come to someplace special without any pretense at all. We were then invited out on the deck to sample a few varieties. And this deck, by the way, is a major confluence of energy, let me tell you.
Were there unicorns?
Well, not that I could see, but I have been informed by a person close to the matter that they are big fans of Pinot Noir.
Huh.
Yeah. So the deck sprawls and overlooks much of the vineyard that goes on for what seems like miles, but it just goes on and on. So we sit there, and it just washes over you, this peace and centeredness. I mean, you know, look, I've been to areas in this country that are supposed to be very sacred spaces and, you know, possess some mystical characteristic. But I got to say, this place had more Zen going on than a dozen of those places I've been to.
And you came back?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I offered to edit audio for rent, but they just smiled and handed me a glass.
Yeah, they get that all the time.
Yeah. So recently, several of us had the opportunity to attend Tory Moore's end of harvest celebration, and I was fortunate enough to meet the owner, Donald Olson, and I asked him if he might consider recording an interview for our humble program here, and much to my shock and amazement, he said sure.
That, of course, had two benefits.
Yes, it indeed did.
One, you get a great interview, and two, you get to go back there to record it.
You know me too well, Mr. Keynes. Don is a fascinating chap. Former neurosurgeon turned vineyard owner, among other things in his storied career. So what follows is actually a edited version of our talk, and for those Patreon-subscribing folks, bless you, you can hear the entire thing on our page there. So without further prattling on here, let's talk with Don Olson, owner of Tory Moore Vineyards, on this.
The Fuse Box Interview.
First of all, congratulations on an end of harvest. We were here not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was, when you had that little soiree.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Yeah. So it was a difficult year. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, how has the pandemic situation affected?
Well, who knows the answer to that? But I, in terms of who we are as a small winery and what we believe is to be a good product that is underexposed. And it's important to us to be who we say we are. And it's important to us to be 100% committed to doing the very best job we can do. So, and that means customer service. And in other life, I was a physician. And this, you can't do neurosurgery if people don't do well.
Kind of a negative sell, yeah.
So you better do well. And that means you better work at what you're doing to make sure it's done right. So, and
that's right.
And Same goes in the wine business. You can't accept second best, and you do it as good as you can. That's the way we run this business. I started this in 1993. Been doing it, I started with nothing, basically, except the grapes from this small little vineyard here. And that being said, we're now larger up by a considerable margin. We're now up to around 10,000 cases. And as I said, started with maybe 1,000 cases. And
now this vineyard, or Torrey Moore as a property, has been here since 72, is that what I understand?
Yeah, it got planted in 72. I bought it in 85. And at that time I was working in Nevada, and I was not happy there. And I read a newspaper in the Wall Street Journal that said, maybe the best place in the world to grow Pinot Noir is Dundee, Oregon. And of course, my question was, where is Dundee, Oregon? So I had a son, like all things, I had a teenage son, and they knew everything. And so I asked him, and he had a girlfriend who was even smarter than he was, and so proceeded to learn that she was from Oregon, and Dundee, Oregon was someplace I ought to come visit. So I did. With that, on a Saturday morning, I came here and had an opportunity to feel the, whatever you want to call this feeling that we have here, because I think there is something here.
Well, that is what I wanted to delve into a little bit, Don, because as I was speaking with you earlier, when I first came to this place, I was absolutely compelled to find out what is going on energetically in this place. It goes beyond feng shui for those who pay attention to such things. It's a very centering kind of energy, and I notice as we look around here, there's a lot of Eastern influences
that's intentional. So I'm a student, or always have been a student, of Frank Lloyd Wright and what he does, and originally from Wisconsin, so had the privilege of seen everything he's done pretty much, because that's the area. There's something special there as well. I tried to mimic that as much as possible, and after a while, there are certain things that happen to you in your life, and you know them when you get up there, but you can't explain them very well beforehand. So when I came here, I knew something was special, and I sat out in this Japanese garden, and I love Japanese gardens, and listened to the bugs, and it was quiet. And with that, the experience of having the opportunity of being here and looking at the grapes and feeling the energy, so to speak, in the field, in the grapes. Grapes are special, you know. They have all the characteristics of a human cell. They have energy systems. They have special systems to remove all the bad stuff from them. Grapes have actually been used as a product to measure human aging programs, and they're a little expensive to do that, so that's they don't do that routinely. But it just says that these things are a living product. Even when it's developed as wine, it's a living product, and still alive in the glass, and is there to be enjoyed and to be appreciated. And the more you learn, the more you appreciate.
Right. So, I find it also interesting that you came to this from a medical background.
I came from, as I said, from Wisconsin, and I went to San Francisco as an intern. And in those days, when you were an intern, you worked very hard. It was typical to work 36 hours straight and then 12 hours off, 24/7. So, but when I did get time off, I would go up to Napa. And Napa's an easy place to fall in love with. And so I did. The more I learned, the more I wanted to learn. But I never thought in a million years I'd ever could own a winery. So, but it became a passion. And I got lucky along the line, and I won a fellowship to go any place in the world I wanted to go. And I went to France. The passion got worse. From there, the evolution of the idea that there's something special in wine that I thoroughly enjoyed. And the more I learned, the more I got entangled with the idea, and hasn't gone away. And so it's like a mistress. It never goes away. It is. So,
one that keeps giving.
Yeah.
As I understand, there was a gentleman who works here as a winemaker who is either of Bordeaux or trained there or...
Yeah, it's true. Actually, when I decided to do the winery, which was 1993, and a friend who was... serious famous here in the vineyards in Dundee, died. And his winery in McFinnville became available, and these were friends of mine. And so I took it over, and my first winemaker was a gal who is also dead now, unfortunately, who is the only winemaker in Oregon who's ever done 100 points on a wine. Her name is Patty Green. And so she worked with me for a number of years, and as we gradually grew. And then after her came Jacques Tarré, which was a French winemaker, seven generations French winemaker from Bordeaux, from Neuilly-Saint-George. So, and stylistically, Patty Green's style and Jacques' style were different. And that's the whole thing about wine. It's like life. It's style. It's how you live, not if you live. It's how you live. Those words have stayed with me. And having lived in Paris for a while, it changes to you. I got to tell you that. No question about it. And brought all that back. And as I said, when the opportunity arose, I bought this place in 1985. And initially sold my grapes to other people, and then started a winery in 1993. So,
yeah. Well, what do you think it is about Pinot in particular that is so popular here? Is it the?
Well, I was totally unfamiliar with Pinot until I went to France, and I liked the big, heavy wines, and because I thought there was substance there, and the longer I had a chance to experience that, the more I got away from that. I love the layering. I love the experience of a great nose and a great mouthfeel and a great finish and all the things that you can pick up characteristic of an Oregon Pinot Noir are what intrigue me. So, and that's what we do predominantly. Our style's classic French, Burgundian style, and where it's got to have fruit forward, blackberry, cherry, soft on the palate, never can bite you. And to have the opportunity to be in the mouth, good mouthfeel, and to be able to experience in your mouth at the same time, because that's where alcohol is absorbed. It's in your mouth, not in your stomach, but in your mouth. And then to have it finish long after it's out of your mouth, and where you can, your taste buds are still alive, and you can feel the experience of having had something very well balanced and eloquent in its nature. And these are the classics of a French Burgundian wine.
Mm-hmm. So. And some of the experiences I've had with the grape out here, I seem to be more of a fan of the fruit-forward stuff in general, and that's, I think, what impressed me most when I came here, not knowing any of what you just described. I was kind of knocked down because it was like, this is what I've been looking for permanently. And most of the other stuff is very good, but, you know, has that dry nature or sure, something like that. Yeah, this was very impressive, and you could tell, like in the event the other night, as we went back in certain years, you could definitely tell what's going on in this glass as the years went back. A maturing was happening. There's certain qualities that were enhancing.
It's a process.
It is.
Yeah, it's a true process, and it's nature's process. That's mm-hmm. another beauty of it all. It's a way how to identify with the land and to be a part of what the land gives back. And I come from a farming family that goes back to the 1800s in Wisconsin to cut a farm out of nothing. And that is a great honor, so to speak. And I'm still a farmer, so I've got my tractor to prove it. So.
Well, you know, we also had the opportunity to try some of the other things that you're making here with grappa, the brandy, the port, which is my personal favorite. That's kind of unusual.
Yeah, it's interesting. We decided to do the port as kind of an experiment. And we had these lees from the Pinot Noir, which we decided to distill. So we got one of the first distilling licenses in Oregon. So we took and made alcohol out of it and then used it to fortify a Syrah grape, which was we were filling with, and to make what turned out to be a port, which we put in the barrels to make. It's really ruby port, but with a tawny flavor, and it's unique, and people really like it, and I hope to take it in May to Portugal. I've asked to do just like they did with Pinot Noir with the French years ago, and I want to compete 1-1. I want to lay it out there side by side and see if it can compete on a blind tasting.
Certainly a hit at my house. I can say that. So I was overhearing a little conversation you were having with my friends here earlier, and it sounds like you may have some other aspirations to raise the Oregon wine awareness, not just around here, but statewide and maybe nationwide and internationally?
Well, we've participated in a lot of stuff. And, you know, I've done side-by-side blind tastings in France with the best of French wine, and we've done pretty well. And so I have to say it's a great pleasure to be recognized to be seen in one of the top hotels of the world, and people you never knew before come up to you and talk about it. A couple of weeks ago, I was kind of at what is equivalent to the Academy Awards of Wine, and down in Napa, and it was like old friends. And so I didn't deserve to be there when I was there. So, some days you get lucky, what can you say?
Are there any prospects in the future as to what you might want to be experimenting with? Or?
Oh, we're doing more of the spirits. I just did a tequila, and mezcal is known as the new tequila, and that's something we're playing with.
Oh.
I have a distiller here that's familiar with that, and the state of Oregon's got a program in New Mexico coming up like the first week in December, and we're going to be a part of that. So it's still too early to tell, but it is something that I think we need to be aware of and a part of. And clearly from grapes you can make a pretty good brandy, and I think
yes.
we have. And you got rated above 90 points with all the cognacs of the world, and yeah. But we haven't gone public. We've never advertised. I think maybe should be advertising.
Probably time.
But we haven't.
Right.
And it's expensive to advertise. You know, we spend all of our time and money on making wine, and growth is difficult over a period of time, and that's really what COVID really shut down, and that was why we are probably talking today, because we're all trying to get back at being who we are.
Exactly. Back to some form of normalcy, if that's possible.
But the normal's changed.
Yes, it has.
And so I'm not sure it'll ever be what it used to be.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult climb. There's a lot of compromises there. But in terms of getting your product out there, do you use distributors?
Oh, yeah. We're in 37 states, 4 different countries at the present time. And it's always growing a little bit, but it's always a little here, a little there, forward and backward. And there's no magic to it all. You can't push a button and make it work. And I've been asked many times, why? When I went back to business school, I learned one of the most important things you can do is ask the question why 5 times. And answering that question, you change each question. And pretty soon at the end of the 5th time, you got a pretty good idea of what's going on. Being said, the why is it important to make a great wine? Well, firstly, because you are who you are. If you're not trying to do your best, you shouldn't be there, in my opinion. And secondly, what is the best? Well, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I think it changes. I've had the opportunity of being in a lot of places in the world and seeing some of the ancient vines and the ancient grape production programs in the Caucasus, which is probably where Pinot Noir started. And there may be pots, big clay pots, didn't have barrels, and it was used mainly by the church as a commodity to sell or trade or do whatever. And I was in Italy in September, and I visited one of these old Italian wineries who were going back to using clay pots. It was amazing, and the quality, I have to say, was excellent. So I don't know there's any magic out there. We talk about biodynamic farming and all these other things. They all work, but which is the best, I don't know, and we keep striving to find that. And every year is a different year. And this year, our harvest, 2022, has been really a pretty good year. And the quality is excellent. So we didn't get hit with the smoke that we got hit in 2020, which was awful.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
And having that on top of COVID. And
double whammy. Did the fires affect?
Oh, yeah, they affected. Probably reduced everything by a factor of 50%, and and you had to be really careful what you did. And I learned more tricks than I probably had ever thought I'd learn, and did an awful lot of those tricks to make our wine as good as it could be in the cellar. You know, great wine comes from the vineyard, but the cellar, the winemaker, is there to nurture that great wine to make it the best that can be. So,
wow.
Wow, indeed, Mr. Keynes. You know, I just love the way science and even medicine find their way into this wine. Much thanks to Don Olson and all the folks at Torrey Moore Winery for making that visit most memorable, and I promise I will return again and again and again.
You know, I'm not much of a wine guy, but after hearing that interview, I think Marcy and I should take that in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, she would truly get the place.
Yeah, I know, I know. They don't do a lager over there, do they?
Not to my knowledge. Damn good port, though. And a grappa and a brandy. You know, who knows what they might be up to in the future. Just like you said.
Hey, maybe they'll do some of your pink platypus or whatever.
Green fairy. Absinthe by name. Who knows? Great things are in the offing there. I do know this. It's the end of this edition of Fusebox and the end of our broadcast season, friends. It's been an exciting year over here, and as I say, we'll have all the partners in crime assembled for a year in review show coming up next month. And thanks again, hugely and bigly too, to the folks at Torrey Moore. Thanks to Sabra May for splendiferous ID pronunciations. Thanks as well to the Doctor of Decibels over there, Milt Keynes, for technical assistance and so on and so forth.
Pleasure as always. And folks, please consider subscribing to this here audio donut by clicking the subscribe button wherever you may have found it. Why, you can even do that on our very own webpage at thefuseboxshow.com.
And we know, writing can be a pain and tedious with a side of annoying. But jotting down a review on this here program would also be great. Again, wherever you may have found it. Thanks to you all for taking the ride with us this year, and next year, bigger and better than ever. I have been your aged in bourbon casks for maximum fuel efficiency host, Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.